Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy-Taylor.
Good afternoon there.
Josh Brown.
Hello there.
Full on energy. We did a Q&A podcast last Friday, and we got a ton of questions. We didn't get through all of them, so I thought we'd mop up the rest of them. Big thank you to everybody who sent them in last week. And we've also added some of our own questions, because I thought it would be hilarious to pose questions to each other, but we'll get to them at the end. So this question comes from .pone, who says, what do you wish the next console generation could do, but hasn't been confirmed yet, or it's something that was previously denied? They would love a built-in mode similar to the NVIDIA Ansel for PC, or backwards compatibility across every previous generation. The NVIDIA Ansel, I think, allows you to freeze any game state, rotate the camera around, take photos, that kind of thing. Because I've seen I've seen something like that with The Witcher, where someone was freezing The Witcher 3 and flying around to take it all in. What comes to mind for that? I would take full legacy backwards compatibility. I feel like that's the easiest open goal that they're just not doing at all.
Yeah, they've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. Like a full legacy back compat box that just plays everything. Like even if I have to download it, even if have to emulate it or whatever. Like that's what I want to spend a monthly subscription on, right? The amount of money that we waste every single month on stuff we don't need. Netflix subscriptions that I don't use, Amazon Prime.
Need another copy of Shovel Knight, all right? I just need it.
You needed another copy of Shovel Knight. Ben Roy needed to buy Resident Evil 4 again. I would rather scrap all that and instead pay some kind of subscription to just have this like intense back catalog for all of like the different platforms, not just Sony, who immediately comes to mind, but for Nintendo, but for Xbox. I just want to be able to play everything in the age where you just want to consume and consume and consume. I want to be able to pop in my Nintendo Switch and be able to play, you know, Super Mario 64, Super Mario Galaxy, Super Mario Sunshine without having to pay £50 for glorified.
Well, that's the cartridge, though, isn't it? Like, unless you got, like, there's no way for that to sort of work, I guess.
But there must be a way. Not. I want
to. Oh, you mean like a subscription service thing?
Yeah, I don't mean like physically. I don't want to be able to put my cartridge.
Jamming a cartridge into a Switch.
Yeah. I mean, like, just be able to even emulate it via like downloading it or even streaming it like PlayStation Now style. Just get me away where I have access to everything, which might sound really entitled, but like it's the future.
Maybe. I think that they've tried it like a little bit with the Switch Online stuff, but it's nowhere near as widely capable as it should be. And like the Mario collection, like Ben Roy, you got it as well. It's like the bare minimum that they could have done.
Yes, I have that, and I'm saving it for the dark times of Christmas. But for me, I'm going to take it one step further and do the give me what I want from Josh and give me something like the, you know, the HD DVD drive for the 360. Give me that, but let me put my legit PS1 games in it and let me play them off that in whatever PlayStation console comes next. Just, you know, a little wire connect to them. Sure, it's fine. Someone's an engineer or a scientist, they can get it to work. And let me put in my copy of Star Wars Episode I: The Phantom Menace that I played to death and has a few scratches on it. Might not work properly, but let me play that disc.
Can I power battles, mate? If we're going to do old school
stuff. I mean, I've got that as well, but, you know, I need Queen of Madala to go to me, you're stepping on my dress.
No,
I need it.
What was that? Was that a game mechanic in the original game? Stop stepping on Amidala's dress.
You would run behind her, and if you, like, just got too close, she would stop and say, you're stepping on my dress. And then a giant tank would blow her up and you'd have to start again.
Oh, God, this isn't a question that's on the thing, but what's either of your most obscure PS1 memory? Because I'm just thinking of ECW Hardcore Revolution on the PS1, which is just one of the worst / best wrestling games ever made.
Dude, it's so funny you should mention, because I was thinking the other night when I was playing Crash or whatever, like, because Crash reminded me of the PlayStation 1, I was thinking about nostalgic games I used to play. I have no idea what this thing was called, right? But it was a game where you used to dive under the sea, searching for treasure, and you had this little, like, rocket-powered, like, thing, and you would just deep-sea dive. And I remember, like, that being a mind-blower when I was a wee Ben, like, growing up. My dad would play it. I don't even know what you were supposed to be doing. I don't think there was any action in it. You literally just swam about underneath the sea, looking for like wrecks.
Was it 3D? Awesome. Was it on PS1?
It was 3D on PS1, yeah.
Because I can't even, I was like, Echo the Dolphin? I can't, Benroy, can you think of anything that would be?
It was like hyper realistic. I might have just like fever dreamed it up, but I'm pretty sure it exists.
It might be that they remade Echo at one point, but that was on like PS2 or something. But yeah, just random obscure PS1
stuff. My obscure one would be SmackDown 2, Royal Rumble, playing like, I'm the best, look at me, and then my mum beat me in a Royal Rumble match and then she won the game, and then that's when she started to go, I like the PS1. Then she bought Time Crisis for herself, then she bought Time Crisis 2 on PS2, and then she started buying Colin McRae rally games, and then I just had to share my PlayStation for a bit.
Oh mate, Colin McRae 2 though, I mean, I remember when me and my grandma would go for SmackDown 2, we would put the AI fighters on and just like have it on in the background while we were talking, and then we would like react to stuff happening with people getting thrown out and stuff, as if it was like a real wrestling thing. But yeah, I guess for pretty much all three of us are just going to go with full on backwards compatibility, some way to play those old gems that you might get, whether we already own them. I love the idea of going to a car boot sale, or I don't know what even Americans call them, some sort of secondhand like trading
flea market. I don't know, I've heard that.
They have yard sales.
Yard sale type thing, where you might sort of pick up a really old PS1 game because you're walking past it, and knowing that you can go home, put it in, and it'll work, would be kind of cool. Next question from Tristan Vett. This one's brilliant. Looking at the release schedule, Ubisoft are releasing 3 AAA games within a month of each other. Which one will fail the most? Assassin's Creed, Valhalla, Watch Dogs Legion, or Phoenix Rising? What's that? That thing's called something else, Phoenix Rising. That game just
they're all the same game, so it doesn't really matter. Really,
kinda, yeah, kinda.
That Goblins Rising thing will probably melt away because it's not got a recognizable name, and we all forget about it every time, like 10 minutes after they show it to us.
Well, like, I think what that game's called. I'm just going to Google it while you're talking.
It's like Ascendance, Phoenix Rising, or something like that. But you know, he's missed out. Like
Immortals, Phoenix Rising.
I don't think any of them.
Formerly Gods and Monsters, sorry.
Yes, which was a better, more memorable name, even though it sounds more generic.
Do you know why they're not called it Gods and Monsters? Do you know know why they can't call it that?
The old Monster Energy came in, flapping it about.
Big old monster, like, hey, oh, lads, only Kojima can have us, so get out. Get out.
We want to be rainwater.
Yeah, but but none of them were going to probably have failed as much as if Rainbow Six Quarantine came out at the moment with the name Quarantine.
God, I forgot that even existed. Yeah. In regards to these things, like, I mean, Phoenix Rising, I feel like people don't even have a touch point on, whereas at least when you see the name Watch Dogs, it's like, well, it's Watch Dogs. It's more
London.
London, like, the whole selling point being like, post-Brexit, guys. Like, yeah, that's definitely what we want. Like, I think Assassin's Creed will do well.
Imagine if they had, like, some sort of bloody zombie DLC in that game afterwards, like it's an bloody outbreak zombie DLC or something. They're like, oh my god,
you've messed up. I'm actually looking forward to that Phoenix Rising, even though I forgot until about 3 minutes ago when I saw the the presentation at the, I think it was the last Ubisoft Forward or whatever. I actually thought it looked good, and I know that you think it just looks like a Breath of the Wild ripoff, but you know what, there haven't been enough Breath of the Wild ripoffs in my opinion. Like, I want more of that kind of open-ended exploration where you just have things in the distance, you can go find them. And it looks, to be fair, like the one that's kind of trying at least to break away from that Ubisoft kind of formula or mold when it comes to just following icons. At least it's doing stuff in world.
Yeah, I think I need to see like a lot more of it, because I mean, like you said, Breath of the Wild was a huge influence on it. Like, you know, I mean, Breath of the Wild was an influence on Assassin's Creed Origins, like in terms of like, I know from talking to some Ubi folk that like the whole like design of that game's layout was like Breath of the Wild style, you know, have this sort of central hub and then blow everything out once you've got used to the core mechanics. And that thing sort of came from Breath of the Wild. But yeah, like you said, there's not been that many Breath of the Wild clones, but I still don't think that anyone can get that game's flow down, because everyone other than Nintendo insists on putting numerics everywhere. Like that Genshin Impact is just like, why don't you grind for this? And why don't you do a loot, like do the loot box? Why don't you roll the dice on this? And I'm like, the whole point of Breath of the Wild was that they got away from all that. It was this beautiful flowing game that was the complete antithesis of all everything that we got sick of in 2017. And then, like I said, Genshin Impact is just like, well, why don't you have stat numerics flying off every enemy that you're fighting? That's what Phoenix Rising gives me the vibe of as well.
I guess Tsushima was the closest to that sort of thing of taking the numbers away and for some reason committing a crime and getting rid of the mini-map.
But wind, mate.
Yeah, wind, no rocks, mini-map. Man. But at least the rain doesn't hinder you in certain ways. You don't get you even get chilly at one point.
You do. So,
yeah.
Tsushima is a brilliant show, because I think that was something that it took me back to Breath of the Wild's sense of flow, which is a really weird thing to sort of like hinge a game's appeal on. But if you've played Breath of the Wild, if you've played Tsushima, there's an almost like tranquil quality to the way it rolls out its hashtag content that I think it does better than the games that give you big lists and side quests and whatever else. There's just a way to take those things in.
Yeah, it's really interesting that we're getting all of these like Ubisoft games, like the person who asked the question said, like all at once, more or less, within the space of like a few weeks or a few months. Like, I wonder if that's like a reality, because they delayed quite a lot of games, obviously, at the start of this year. They pushed them forward and they made it so that they're releasing cross-gen and stuff. I wonder whether like they just have to get them out now, because if they push them now, they might get away from the end of the fiscal year. Maybe that impacts the overall thing. So that worries me a bit. I want to make sure that they're all ready to go, and that they're all as good as they can be, and they're not just getting released because this is as far as they could push them without taking a big hit.
I think it's physical, and the fact that it's cross-gen, and also a bit like Cyberpunk, where the calendar's full up. If Cyberpunk was delayed one more time, it's probably going to be next year now. Like, no game can slip without their sales being impacted in a way, or literally go buggering off until like February sometime.
But, I mean, for me, I think they had that whole like scandal allegation reality check thing with like that guy. I don't even know what his name was. Nor am I going to Google it. The dude that was at the core of why all their games have been pretty crap for the last few years in regards to just greenlighting the same, you know, structures over and over and over again. That guy has now left the company. And so I think that as soon as that guy left, you immediately got all the different Netflix projects got greenlighted. They started talking about different sequels that they clearly couldn't get through before, or different creative ideas. And I kind of wonder just how much he was also behind wanting to get games out the door to cash in as fast as possible, rather than give them the time in the oven. So I think that, you know, they kept doing these delays with like Watch Dogs. And I mean, it is these three games that we've sort of been waiting on for a while. But I think, if just gut feeling, I think these three will be the most polished Ubisoft games you've seen in a long time, because they've actually been able to sort of prioritize quality control for a change.
I hope so, because I think they all have, you know, for as much as we kind of rag on the Ubisoft open world formula, or, you know, Assassin's Creed coming out every 2 years and kind of being very similar, like, I think all of the games mentioned do have at least something going for them, at least one cool idea. Like, even Watch Dogs, I do take umbrage with the setting and the kind of tone they're going for. But the idea of being able to, like, jack into all of these different NPCs and all of them kind of bringing their own unique style of play and kind of having permadeath in there and stuff. Like, there are some cool ideas in there if they're capitalized on well and their potential is fulfilled. So all of them I'm interested in. None of them I've, like, completely written off, even though we have kind of joked about it. But also, I'm not properly looking forward to any of them, you know what I mean? They're all existing in this weird liminal space at the moment.
It's weird, because I think, like, not to shoot on you, just, but I think you might be a little wrong about Watch Dogs. I think that it's a secret. It's a secret Aiden Pierce sequel, because, like, oh, you can play as him. He ain't gonna put a permadeath, he's gonna just respawn. He's even got a bit of a story in there. I think it was just they had him and they're like, he's not as iconic or legendary as we thought, so let's throw a few grannies in there to,
you know,
make
what?
Everyone happy and wacky. And you finish the game as him.
You know what, Benroy, you're right. Hang on. Mom, I'm not coming home. Benroy's killed me. Sorry, I can't
come
back.
Can't make it home for Christmas, Nat.
No, I'm done. Bye. No, okay, fair enough. You are right in that regard. I will give you that.
I still cannot believe we live in a timeline where Sam Fisher can't get a 3D render of himself outside of a cameo in some DLC, but we can get a full-on new version of Aiden effing Pierce. Just ridiculous. Although I do kind of wonder, I mean, the whole Watch Dogs Legion thing, that like any character can pop up, you can control anybody, and it's got this whole... I'm fascinated by the literal machinations of how that works, because I remember when, before No Man's Sky came out, where it was like, every animal is different, every sound they make is different, because everything is procedurally generated, even down to the way the animations move and the pitch of their sound and everything else. And then when I remember when I picked it up and I got the art book, and it was like, oh... these are like the six skeletons that everything else is built off. And it was like, okay, it all slot into place. And I got how they generated that much stuff. I wonder what those, the quote unquote skeletons are for Watch Dogs Legion, because they've said that, you know, everybody is playable, but how does that even work?
Can I be cynical again? Yes. You're just going to walk into a room like GTA Online. Your characters are going to stand there going, like, for anyone who's just listening, you stand there lifeless, yes, barely breathing, as a character talks at you, points to a board, or points to a smartphone, and goes, smartphone, smartphone, Brexit, Brexit, let's do this. And that's all it's going to, that's every cutscene's going to be, unless they worm their way into an Aiden Pierce.
I forgot, actually, did you guys see the example they put out of the AI-generated dialogue? Did you, either of you hear that?
No.
That was a hell of, okay, that's a hell of a thing. That just came flooding back to me. They do have a pool of dialogue options that get picked to be slotted into different parts of a sentence so that it can try and algorithmically generate a conversation between any number of characters. And that very much sounds like this the whole time. And
I wonder if,
yeah,
I wonder if that game's going to cancel itself.
Yeah. It just throws something in that it's, we all love Brexit. Like, yeah, that would be great. Just can't get enough of it. I don't know. I think what they're building sounds really ambitious. I love the idea of it. I still like just don't think Watch Dogs is what Ubisoft wants it to be. And I never thought it really got off the ground. I always thought it was just so hampered by that first installment. But I still think these three games, like I said, will be super polished because they kind of need them to be. And this might just be the end of the Ubisoft formula because the dude that was reinforcing it has now left the company. So hopefully it's greener pastures next gen. Next question from Rex Wolfley, who says, given that it usually takes 2 to 3 years in a console generation to really figure out what they are, what predictions do you have for each console's future in a few years? Mr. JB, what do you think?
My Lord, I think just going off from what they're stressing, I just think we'll see far bigger and more kind of open worlds. I think we're going to see that kind of funneled level design, even in open world games, where a lot of stuff is kind of hidden. You know, we were just talking about Assassin's Creed there. And for as much as I genuinely do think, like, their open worlds are kind of, like, lavished with, you know, detail, attention, there's so much passion's gone into creating them, you can still sort of see the papered over cracks where they are creating the illusion of something that they cannot render all at once. So you have these kind of like dense forests, which kind of like limit the draw distance and stuff that you have to go through, a lot of kind of copied and pasted textures. Whereas I think and hope that in 2 or 3 years, we'll just start seeing these worlds without those limits, where you will be able to see one end of the map to the other with obviously, you know, there's reduced quality along the way, but there won't be those kind of, you know, forests obscuring the view that you have to go through, or those kind of corridors you need to shuffle down while the next kind of area loads. And I think that, you know, it's easy to take the mick out of that being a main feature of next gen and be like, well, I don't really mind walking through corridors. I don't really mind having those.
I do. I hate going through those areas. Stupid crevices that are in every game.
I hated it in Final Fantasy VII. It got pathetic at the end of that.
it does suck. But I just think with that away, it will hopefully fundamentally change how developers can construct levels without those limitations. Maybe we see, you know, worlds that are more vertical than ever, that are more dense than ever, that have more interiors than ever. And even better, all of that is connected and rendered kind of like in real time, where you don't have to spend 5 minutes waiting in a loading screen just to get into a building, or have the whole world kind of like feel segmented in a way that it is now. And I think it's something that we will look back on and just kind of think, man, remember when we had Final Fantasy VII? We had to do all of those shimmies past those walls.
But I think like, those things, that stuff feels archaic now. Like, I mean, like Benroy said, like it sticks out. And I mean, that doubly or quadruply stuck out to me as someone who, you know, was never there in the original one. Obviously, it's a different style of game, but you know, it felt like padding even more so. But in regards to like the loading thing, I remember, and it would have been in an official PlayStation magazine back in like 2001, whenever they very first started previewing The Getaway. I don't know if either of you read the previews back in the day, but they wrote it up in a way that said that you would be on the run, because The Getaway was an old school crime open world thing for anyone who didn't play it, GTA style, but set in London, photo reel. And the selling point for that was that you could be on the run from the police, and they cited that you could go into a McDonald's, order yourself a burger, sit down, have a nice little burger, and the police would run past you thinking that you were someone else. That never came true, did it? So the SSD can make it happen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's the dream of being able to go into every building in like one of those games that we've never realized, like maybe that sort of thing as well. And I just want to be a parasite and jump on Josh's point again, because he's got such good points. As much as it started to sound like he maybe wanted flat earth in games where you could just see from one end of the map to the other, it's more I think he's got a point, because replaying Resident Evil 7 again, and now I'm not so scared until I fight giant monsters. I'm running through the game a bit. Mm-hmm. And when I go from like the main big house to the old house, as you go through a gate, the game fades to black and fades back up, and I get a little loading thing, and for a second or two it stops me. I'm like, wait, I've never remembered this before, because obviously when I played it years ago I was scared. I was like, where is everything? So I was going very slow, so the game had time to catch up. Mm-hmm. So this is why, like, this kind of made me think about like Resident Evil 8, how they're like, they haven't announced it officially for PS4 yet or Xbox One, because they can't get it to run. And I think this is the thing of like, it's just allowing them to render more stuff at the high quality that we all sort of expect. Because mm-hmm. even if you look at, like, say, like a Final Fantasy or a Resident Evil 7 now sort of thing, the textures, they just don't pop in for ages. Mm. Like with Final Fantasy, I'm noticing that tap that looks like just a rectangle that someone maybe even forgotten in the corner. Just like, what's going on there? But as you go through, you notice a lot of, like, the characters look beautiful and all the monsters look terrifying in Resident Evil, but then you see, like, that can, I can't read it for about 5 minutes while it sort of loads up and sort of thing. So I think Josh has it on the head. Like, he's like, bam, got it. It's basically to be able to load, like, what we have at such a high, like, demanded resolution, but more of it, basically.
Yeah, without those sacrifices, you know what I mean? Like, that level of quality, the level of Final Fantasy VII's character models just across the board, without sort of seeing where they're, like, squeezing blood from a stone, you know what I mean? Because they've made the most, to be fair to them, of, like, this generation's hardware, considering it was kind of underpowered back in 2013. Like, the amount they managed to get out of that and the differences from launch games to now is impressive. But at the same time, exactly like Benroy says there with Final Fantasy, to get that level and to make it seem like they've bumped it up a notch, you can see where they've had to take it down a notch in other areas that you might not care about at the moment.
There's also, like, just the sheer game design, level design. Like, Mike Bithell's been talking a lot about this on the Play Watch Listen podcast, which I guess shout out to that lot. But, like, as on the game dev side, he was like, the idea of any game giving up all of its data all at once, you don't have to have corridors to mask loads, you don't have to have the crevices and things like that. And it's not just, like, texture detail, it's literal world geometry that, you know, you can make something that is constantly playable, constantly flows. And he was talking about the almost ethical side of it, that you can't really make something that is endlessly playable, because then someone will sit and just potentially just play it endlessly for X amount of hours because they don't have those breaks in regards to load times or things like that. And he said sometimes, you know, they'll bake them into the game so you can actually take a breath or a mental breath or whatever to take this stuff. And I think all that stuff is fascinating. But I hope that in, you know, going forward, maybe in a couple of years, we'll see some sort of new genre, some way of playing a game that fundamentally couldn't be done before just because of the way the data is being accessed, whether that's through, I don't know, literal visuals or just the way that you interface with those levels. That's what I would hope for. But I don't know, it seems like we're on the precipice of something insane, like the idea that it blows everything. We've never had no load times in games before, but it's going to take a while for the Xbox side to catch up.
I'm just excited as well about Resident Evil. Like, I'm going to talk about Resident Evil 8 not being able to work on this gen. Like, that shows that they're actually doing something, whether it's just horsepower, whether it's like they're rendering, they're going back to Resident Evil 6 secretly and they render a giant fly that's going to be there and they can't render it as much. But whether it is like that, they're doing something that they can't do now. Mm-hmm. And then that, for me, makes it like already worth it and warranted.
Yeah, I'm watching that little bit demo that they put out of Miles Morales, where he like does the double webs and flies through a vent, goes from inside a warehouse to outside, and it's instant. I just want to see that stuff. Next question from Tom, quite a quick one, who says, do you think that CD Projekt Red, after Cyberpunk, will revisit the Witcher world? I guess it's that whole general idea of the Witcher 4. Do you guys want to see a Witcher 4 in some fashion?
After, like, because me and Benroy both like replayed it like this year, yeah, Witcher 3. So after going back to it, I really do. And maybe it's just because it is a recency thing that I've gone back to it. But I think there's so many kind of characters in that world, like Ciri. Oh my God, I have forgotten her name.
Cirilla Fiona.
Cirilla, that's it. Like exactly. Like I don't know much about it. She's only in that third game, you know, like briefly mentioned otherwise. And I feel like the focus is so much on Geralt that I think it would be really cool, you know, like so many other main characters before him, for him to kind of be separated and to occupy a sort of supporting role, like be in the game still, but not be controlled by you. Yeah, sort of like see a different side of him, because even though it is an RPG series, you have a lot of control over what Geralt does within the franchise. I think The Witcher is so fascinating because he's such a distinct character, even though you can control him. Like all of the different personality choices in one form or another align to who Geralt could be, at least, or who he is at his core. And I think that's why he would work even outside of the player's control. So I would I'd be fascinated to see him from a different perspective and a kind of like different part of the world that we haven't seen before. And I just think there's too much money in it. They're definitely going to come back.
Did you guys play the DLC, like Hearts of Stone and Blood and Wine? Yeah. I think the way that Blood and Wine, Renway, did you play it as well?
I did not.
Ah, just Blood and Wine, the way that they leave it off at the end of Blood and Wine is like you put a bow on it, like it's so perfect, like that I didn't really want them to go back to that. And the idea of him being in like an advisory role is kind of interesting though, just because it worked so well in Metal Gear Solid 2.
I think, he'll be a kind of like a Gandalf character where he's like the old wise one or the old Obi-Wan sort of character. But I don't think for a while, we're thinking maybe we might get one at the very end of this next generation, but I don't think we're going to see it for a while, like for a long time. And if from what we've heard is true, that they want to focus on Cyberpunk now. And I reckon they feel like there's going to be enough Witcher stuff out there with the TV series. And I don't know if there's more books coming out, but I'm going to be the sad one here. I was like, no, there's going to be no more Witcher for probably 7 to 10 years.
They referred to Witcher and Cyberpunk as like the two pillars of their like identity or something. It was like it's like the Elder Scrolls and Fallout of Bethesda. It's that they're the things that they want to go back to. But I guess it would have to be a very specific story to return to.
I'd say it's also weird as well. And it's a quick point, but like how Witcher is so perfect that you take the RPG stuff, like what we have in, say, a Skyrim, but they give you an actual character to use, and Geralt is a character, whereas Cyberpunk, it seems like that blank slate, sort of like do whatever you want with it. So I'm still curious about Cyberpunk in that way, like how is that going to, I hope they create it more of a pit and you get more of a characterization out of it.
It's the Geralt, for me, when I played through The Witcher in 2015, I still do think Geralt is the perfect open world RPG protagonist, because he's like, he's completely emotionally blank based on like his own backstory. He's been stripped of all humanity and emotion, but then it's about him clinging back to different parts of it and like coming back together ego and realizing you can have emotions and fall in love and whatever. But yeah, the cyberpunk stuff, super quickly, I think the voice acting in that just sounds horrible so far. I don't know if either of you think the same thing from what they've shown. But
I've just
like,
avoided it. I've just avoided just, it.
All of it's just like, yeah, man, we're going to do this and we're going to go over here and duh. And I'm just like, what is this? Like,
blech. See, going back to The Witcher 3, I also realized something similar with that game, but that game gets away with it because it's the old-timey English, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because of like the dialect and the writing of that game, I think it gets away with the kind of more cringy dialogue in a way.
Do
that
you have
I'm
an
not
example,
sure
sir?
Well, I don't know. There's just like a lot of cock and bollocks in there, isn't there? Like a lot of crude cock and bollocks when it comes to The Witcher 3.
I wish that was our review quote just on the back of the box. Just a lot of cock and bollocks. Josh Brown, 2015.
A lot of really good cock and bollocks, cock and bollocks.
I forget. Who's the big bald lad that you help out for a bit
Dijkstra.
In the baths?
Dijkstra.
Yeah, like he's very lewd and sort
very
of...
cock and bollocks, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's, I'm interested to see just how much if YouTube's cock and bollocks algorithm pick up on saying cock and bollocks over and over again.
We said it too many times.
Yeah,
you never
or
know.
Maybe, yeah.
So these final three questions are the ones that we thought we'd pose to each other. We have gone probably over time, who knows, I haven't really been timing it that well, but we do have a question each. My question for you two is, how far do both of you see yourselves going in pursuit of next gen visuals? Because for me, I'm already thinking like I'm gonna have to get a new TV. Am I gonna bother getting the new half step consoles? Because I feel like I opened a gate this generation, and it was a gate very much held open by Josh Brown, but I did walk through it. And I do now have, I got the 4K TV, I can't tell the difference. And I got a PS4 Pro and I can't tell the difference. But I am forever thinking that I should still keep going down this pasture. So yeah, what do you guys think of all this half-step stuff and the idea of buying, you know, the latest technology to keep up with stuff, almost in a way that I feel like the PC mentality is. I feel like they're, us console people have become PC people in terms of we're chasing the latest hardware all the time.
To an extent, I think, especially with like the half-step consoles and stuff, making us more aware of what we're getting and kind of having to interrogate the specs a bit more to properly tell the difference. But so for me,
side by side comparisons.
Yeah, it's like one of the only kind of tech things I've properly been interested in, because while I obviously love video games, like I'm not really into, you know, what the latest phones are or anything like that. Like computers, I don't even know how computers work half the time. Like I don't really like them. I'm not really getting into them. But when it comes to like TVs and consoles and visuals and stuff, I want to make sure that I'm getting the most out of it. And to be honest, guys, I might actually just stop watching Digital Foundry, because they make great content, but it always has me panicking over whether or not I'm experiencing my games at the best.
I wish I had a archive of everything that you've sent me, because randomly at like 11 o'clock you'll just send me a message. I think I'm going to get this 8k 8 grand 4 or 5 grand TV. The nits are better, and I'm like, what the hell's going on, Josh Brown? And then a week later I'm like, yeah, I'll probably do that as well, to be honest. But it's just complete insanity. Benroy, you've been a hell of a lot better moralistically than both us two, because you stuck with your 2013 console the whole time.
I am going to go half step next time. I'm just going to buy the new things next time, because nothing is running as smooth as it would, and like a bit like these new generation of games, everything's like rocking on like thin ice. Like I'm just waiting for things to break now, and I'm just like, come on. You've got a month to go. Let's just do this. We can do this.
But with TV, the finish line.
With TVs, I'm always in a sort of a cycle where I wait 5 years, because I'm not going to just go another 2 years, because it's just the money compared to what you're getting out of it is just not going to add up to what you want, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And having having dealt with 4K and things like that really early on in my past jobs and things like that, I got way into HDR and all that sort of thing really early. And I have the nice TV there. Because I want to watch all my media's, even in streaming, even though you can't really get the best if you're streaming, like you got to get the Blu-rays and stuff, but I want to watch the best, highest quality I can. Mm-hmm. And then missing out on the PS4 Pro and then seeing no point in the One X.
That's the thing, there's so many permutations of the same thing.
We talk about this every day, and I still can't get it right. I see no point in that, really. Like, I don't think it has a Kinect slot, so it's pointless. But like,
well, yeah, exactly.
Are
you going to play Kane and Lynch, mate? You can't.
Yeah, you can play Kane and Lynch. I think that's back. You can't plug a Kinect in, so it's no point in having an Xbox anymore. But sure. For me, it was always like I didn't see the point of these half steps, but now I do, because I've lived with the pain for the next few years. So I will be doing the half step stuff. And I, I'm kind of like in between you both. I'm not as mental as Josh Brown, where I think he's got a new TV every 2 months or something.
He's got one on the way, yeah.
Smashes it. Yeah. You're no use to me anymore, and just gives me one sort of thing.
More nits!
There are, just outside my apartment window, there's just like a mountain of TVs that I just set fire to now and again, yeah.
If you want to find where Josh lives, look for the burnt out TV. But like, I'm in that TV cycle where I kind of like wait for like the new thing, like the HDR to be out for about a year, then you jump in sort of thing. And with consoles, I'm just going to do a half step from now on. But then I'm getting a Series S because I want to save a bit of money and don't spend a grand.
Oh, I think I don't know. I feel like if I got a Series S, I would at some point I would see something on the X and be like, oh, I should have got that.
You've got a 1X though, so you don't even need to buy...
I know, but I'm going to get it anyway, aren't I? I can't not get it. This is the illness.
Unless someone in the comments or in the world of the internet, unless the internet knows, I don't think there's any point of buying 1X, Series X, if you've got a 1X. I don't think there is. I think that at this point, you're just giving like Phil Spencer and Todd Howard some pocket money. That's it.
I want to give it a big spend, but I mean, he said that he doesn't necessarily think that the X, he thinks the S will outsell the X over time. Also, in terms of reasons to get it, I can suspend Burnout Revenge and SSX 3 at the same time and just jump between them. You can't do that, can you? You've got to shell out half a granny so I can do that.
I won't ever play them games ever again, probably.
They're beautiful games, mate. They look even better on the
screen. I've done it. I'm done.
I did it 13 years ago. Yeah, I know. Mr. Benroy, your question fairly quickly was which game do we want to forget so we could experience it for the first time again, which is a great shout. JB, do you have anything that comes to mind? My mind always just goes to Metal Gear because I think that's something that I cherished the most the first time.
Metal Gear will be up there for me, like Metal Gear 2. But if I had to go for one, it would be also a Kojima thing, Death Stranding, experiencing that the first time, not only the story but getting to grips with like the mechanics and stuff. Like I remember playing, absolutely hammering the opening like 8 hours in like one day or something, and just getting to the point where I wasn't tripping over my own ass and every single rock that I found. Like that was such a great learning experience, and I felt like I couldn't engage with those mechanics in that way again going back to it because I know too much almost. I don't want to just blitz through it. My mouth just exploded. I want to be able to sort of start with nothing again, start from scratch, and build myself up in the way that I did the first time.
Plays its hand in a way that it's almost like a magician's trick. Like it can't be replicated. And I remember when all three of us went through it the first time, was one of the most joy. Have you seen this? Have you unlocked this? Have you tried going this way? Like, and then trying to figure out the story. I still think it completely implodes at the end, but the actual journey was absolutely phenomenal. Like just one of the best the whole generation. I might just back up Death Stranding. Benoy, did you have one that you wanted to throw in, or are you just proposing the question?
I'm going to back up Death Stranding, but also I'm just going to say The Last of Us as well. In my weird logic, so anyway, if you forget the first game, you can forget the second game until you finish the first game and the second game is back there. So shut up, everyone. But I want to forget the first Last of Us so I can experience it again and just play that bloody effing brilliant game and just experience it and have from start to finish and just go through it and just live it once more and just be there and have Joel be my fake dad and then have Troy Baker chase me around Death Stranding afterwards.
Yes, it's a beautiful combo. Mr. JB, your final question. If we had one gaming recommendation we could give for the rest of our lives, what would it be? Franchises or individual games? Do you mean you want to hold something up on a pedestal that will never get old? Or is it, we can never give another recommendation ourselves?
Yes, essentially, you know, you can only recommend one game or franchise or whatever for the rest of your life. If someone comes to you and says, Scott, man, like, what do I play? Like, give me something to play. Like, what can get me into video games? You can only pick one.
Oh, God. But it also has to roll in. Like, well, it's what's going to hit you emotionally. What's going to take you to a higher plateau? What's going to be the most worthwhile? What is the most that this medium can give you through the lens of an individual game or a franchise? I might have to go with Final Fantasy if I can recommend an entire franchise. I know. And it would have been Metal Gear. But I think that the highs of Final Fantasy 7 and 9 specifically and the worlds that they create, especially 7, 8, 9, 10, are just like spiritually uplifting, especially in 7 and 9's case, that I wouldn't be able to say about other full franchises. And even the Final Fantasy at its lowest moments is still pretty damn incredible. I'm going to say the entire Final Fantasy franchise. Benroy, over to you.
I'm going to go for what I think is the best game of all time and my favorite game, The Last of Us.
Shout.
Yeah, you know what?
Last of Us is the one that elevated everything else and just said, like, look, games can compete with any sort of...
Just changed everything for me.
completely elevated.
The Last of Us 1 and 2, to be honest. Like, that's the game that I always recommend to people who aren't really into games. Like, and they always have such a great reaction to it. Like, Adam Nicholas, who plays games now and again, is a great man. Like, he was playing through The Last of Us 1 and then The Last of Us 2 this year.
I remember
Seeing, getting his reactions, like, his messages through, like, reacting to plot points and things that are going on. Like, it's just joyous being able to share those moments. And I feel like that is a game in a series that, like, resonates with people who have played a million games, with people who have played like five games in their entire life. Everyone has a reaction to it. Everyone can experience it. It's so accessible. So that for me, I think that would be the one constant that I could always fall back on to be like, hey, play The Last of Us, you know?
I would definitely back that too. I just think, with given the whole scope of what the question was, I was like, man, if I can serve you up a nice little platter, then in the middle of that platter, it could be The Last of Us. But I think if I have, here's all the Final Fantasy. Plus, I can force Ben Roy to play the original Final Fantasy VII, and you. And you're never going to do it unless you have my platter.
My friend is playing the original game at the moment, so I'm living that game through him. No. I mean,
you'll get there. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Good night, everyone.
And Josh Brown.
See you later.
Thank you for the questions, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.